Hello and welcome to Leaning Into Lights. Ooh, hello ambulance. Leaning Into Lights free recording for March 2018. I'm Jessica Rios. I'm the founder of Leaning Into Light. And every month we offer these free recordings. They are interviews, conversations, useful things for your life, we trust. And you can find them on our website at leaningintolight.com on our workshops page. We offer these workshops every month to give you tools to constantly recover from pain, from sadness, from loneliness, from anything that's not so pleasant in life, to joy, to love, to peace of mind, to the things that do feel good. So welcome to the interview for March. Today, our guest is Daniel Högberg. Daniel is a father, a graphic designer, and a musician. And Daniel's lived in Sweden almost all his life. So welcome to the show today, Daniel.
Thank you very much.
And today we don't really have a title, but I'll just make one up right now. It's on Sweden. We're talking about Sweden today. And why? Because, as you might know, my family and I, my husband Hjalmar, who's from Sweden, and our daughter Helena are living in Sweden for 1 year. And I've not done much sharing about it yet in writing or otherwise. And there are a lot of people who are curious. What's it like here? You hear what you might hear on the news or from somebody who visited for 2 weeks. But to hear it from someone who's been here for a year is different. And then from somebody who's lived here all his life is different. So, Daniel, you're someone who I've met while in Sweden and who has such a beautiful perspective on life from your heart, from spirit, and also historically and politically, you know, from an intellectual perspective. So, again, thank you so much for...
Well, thank you for having me.
...for being here. So we're going to start with something that I heard, let's see, I was in a backyard, we were having a barbecue, there were perhaps some margaritas involved, and somebody said, oh, have you heard about Lagom? And I'm like, no, what's Lagom? So tell us, what is this thing Lagom that people talk about in Sweden?
Yeah, it has become a bit of a buzzword, I think, lately. And it's funny because it's a word that when you grow up with it, you don't really consider it as something really special or something like that. And it wasn't actually until I had an English girlfriend for many years, and when she was learning Swedish, I had problems to translate Lagom. I realized that there wasn't really a one-word equivalent really in the English language. And that's when I realized that it was quite a Swedish or Nordic or Scandinavian word. Mm-hmm. And what it actually means is it has to do with... Lagom is when something is just the right amount. And it's not too much, not too little. It's a bit like Goldilocks, you know. It's when you have something that is just the right amount that you need, and I think it's like it could be seen as moderation in a way, and it's also a word that kind of describes the Swedish psyche very well. Mm. I think it's maybe a myth, but the word is supposed to come from log om, which means that you share some food or a drink, and it should last around the table. Mm-hmm. Log is like a team or a family or something like that, and om is around. Oh. So you take your share, but it should be enough for everybody. Uh-huh. So you take just the right amount. Mm-hmm. That's, mm-hmm. I think that actually is a myth.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I don't think it it actually comes from that, but it's a beautiful picture,
yeah,
of the world, I think.
Yeah, nice explanation.
Yeah, very
mm-hmm.
much.
And it seems... you know, from an American perspective, from a California perspective, or at least from my perspective, I can say that being in Sweden, and I've mostly been here in the city of, we're in southern Sweden in Gothenburg, it's not flashy here like America can be. You don't look around and see, I mean, I think I've maybe seen one really expensive Italian car. In America, as long as you're anywhere near a big city or, you know, the coasts, you see lots of them. And it's just not as flashy here. People are driving average cars, lagom cars.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people here live in apartments. And I think in the rural areas, yes, there are people here with lots of money. But in general, it's just, I have enough. I don't need to have more. So would that be, would that be a...
Absolutely, absolutely. I think there is being boastful of wealth or something like that is it's very un-Swedish in many ways. I think that, and I think that Lagom also translates into in Scandinavian design and all this. It's quite sort of minimal, functional sort of. And not cluttered. Not a lot of sort of look at me, sort of design. It's scaled down and sort of quite minimal. And I think that Swedes in general see flashy things as a bit not tasteful. So I think it's a word that has become very big, even also internationally lately, the last years, but it has humble roots and it's something that, I mean, it has become like this word, almost a bit sort of zen-like. But it's a word that we're just taking for granted, just like any other word.
Well, and when you speak to it being picked up more on an international level, Sweden has some practices, some policies, some cultural expressions that are really beautiful. They're really life-affirming, and they are admired on an international stage for very good reason. Lagom, which I had no idea, I'd never heard the word before I got over here. However, I did aspire, I have aspired for at least a decade toward a life of plenty, not too much, sufficiency, just right. And this is getting into the arena of Lagom, which you say is just the right amount. And so, gosh, may it be so that Lagom becomes more popular because, well, it's okay to have somebody who likes to sing out loud when they walk down the street. I personally don't think there's a problem with that. But when we have just enough, when we talk about material things, you know, it's better for the planet. It's better probably for our own personal life too. So this is one of the things that Sweden can help the world learn. And, there's a lot, and Sweden's not perfect. So, you know, we, but I'm just pointing that out as a, an expression of thanks for Sweden to share that more with the world. So let's tell the listeners now, some of you listeners might know much more than I do about international politics and government. It's not a focal area for me, but in the values expressed within the Swedish political system, we can learn some things, right? We can learn some things. So Daniel, will you tell us what kind of government system, what kind of political system does Sweden have today? And, you know, I want to say that many people think it's a socialist country. Is it socialist? Is it democratic socialist? And what does that mean? And what does it look like for people's daily lives?
Yeah, it's Sweden has a quite sort of interesting political history because we've had this social democratic party since a very long time, but they've been ruling almost without any interruptions since the 30s. And it means that they have had the chance to bring a lot of changes around that wouldn't have had been possible if you would have swapped sort of political paths.
Changed back and forth to different parties.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And to understand why it has been like that, you have to go back to the sort of turn of the century, 100 years ago, when Sweden was quite a poor country on the periphery of Europe, and quite big differences in wealth and so on. A lot of people were starving, and you know, that's why we had so many people who went as immigrants to the US and so on. I think 1 million Swedes out of five or something at the time went to abroad to US and other places. So it was quite dire. And then with the rise of socialism in Europe, it also happened in Sweden, and they gained a lot of popularity with people and workers. And then around, I don't remember the year, but sometime around 1915 or 1920 or something, they made a split within the party between the revolutionary socialists and the reformist socialists, or something, meaning that the revolutionary socialists went and formed their own party, and the social democrats, as we know them today, were born. Meaning that they had was that we want to change things through reforms, not through revolution. Mm-hmm. And it's a social democracy. It's built on democracy, but it has a socialist worldview, so mm-hmm. to speak. And I think it became very effective in changing the society for the better, and that's why we have had so much sort of high living standard and so on.
Uh-huh.
Because we had it for such a long time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's back up for a minute here. So as an American, you know, I was one of the Americans who voted for our last... Well, I didn't vote for the person who was elected, and I voted for, I wanted Bernie Sanders to win. You know, we don't get into politics much at Leaning Into Light, and I'm okay with wherever people stand. I believe in a lot of the principles that Bernie Sanders stands for. And the word socialism got thrown around a lot and got pretty sloppy as far as the actual understanding of what it is. And, you know, I really would love to hear from you about what is it? What does it look like? What does it mean? You know, what is socialism? And then here for you, as somebody who's lived in a place that has practiced more socialist values over a long period of time, you know, like you said, there's a higher standard of living. You know, what are some of the just kind of the key ways that it has made life look for people? What does it mean?
I think the main sort of, I remember growing up, you know, when you were in school, when you were 8 or 10 years, and you started to get a bit of a worldview from teachers and stuff like that, and you realize that you lived in a country which had the best school system, the best health system, and one of the richest countries in the world, and it was something that we were kind of used to, that has changed in many ways, but the politics has changed as well, and it's something that we've had for such a long time. I mean, this Swedish model or Nordic model or that Bernie Sanders endorses, or, you know, he talks about in a positive way. It's something that we've had 50 years. I mean, especially, I mean, from the 30s until the 80s. And then the Social Democratic Party started to change, like a lot of parties, similar parties around the world during the mid-80s, you know, with Reagan and Thatcher and later on, because of that, I don't know, maybe because of that, the Social Democratic Party, as well as like the Labour Party in the UK, they started to move more towards the right, more centre stage. But up until the 80s, it was still kind of more sort of socialist, openly socialist, but social democratic. I mean, nothing like the Soviet or something like that. Mm-hmm. Very, very, very different. So it's been a good place to grow up in. It has given us a lot of things that we now take for granted, but we realize it's not granted when you come abroad. So, yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just a question that popped into my mind, you know, and you just have your opinion, you know, I realize this, you can't predict the future, just like I can't. But, you know, America is a wild place of chaos and messiness and drama, and there's also so much beauty there. I think for me, being here in Northern Europe for now almost 8 months, I have done some forgiveness of some of the things that my country has done and claimed ownership in it in a way, like on a spiritual level. You know, I feel we all owe an apology for stealing land from Native Americans. We all owe an apology to children for being afraid to go to school. It's within all of our psyche. It's within all of us. And America's a mess, a beautiful mess. I feel like millennials and whoever comes after them and all those labels we give generations, you know, there's, you know, Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton, whatever, but we're getting closer to having some kind of revolution or reform. I don't know what it is, but where somebody with some real sense about them might get elected. Now, I know that once you get into that office, you get probably more attention than anybody else on the planet when you're the president of the U.S. I know it's very tainted. It's way more complicated than you or I can understand to actually sit in that seat. You get influenced by so much. How close do you think, how likely do you think America is to elect somebody with more Scandinavian values, more of a sense of respect for the planet, respect for people's right to health care, people's right to education?
It's a difficult question. I mean, it's just my opinion, really, but I think it's... I think the problem is, at least from where I'm standing, being a Swede, is that the U.S. presidents have also been quite rich people. I mean, and a lot of the campaigning money comes from rich people, so there's a lot of interests that you have to cover. In Sweden, we have the campaign money is given by the, if I remember right now, is given by the government for the political parties once they reach above a certain threshold. So, in a way, everybody is at all the parties are at equal terms. In that sense. Also, I don't think that a millionaire would be trusted as a prime minister in Sweden. You know, it goes, you know, I don't think people would really give their trust to someone with that much wealth.
To represent a population of people mostly made up of non-millionaires.
Yeah, exactly.
Why would,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, for instance, if we look at a current president, he started off as a welder. And he moved up in the labor unions, which are very strong in Sweden. And a lot of Swedes are members of unions in Sweden. It's very common. And unions, the government serves as a sort of a negotiator between the unions and the corporations. So there's a kind of a mutual understanding. Yeah. So the unions are very strong in Sweden. I mean, our former president moved up through the ranks of the union, but he was a welder from the start.
Yeah.
And I think that for the US, I think that the money needs to lose the grip of the politics.
So we can go.
So I think Bernie Sanders is is trying to do something there, but I wonder if he would have succeeded because the grip from the rich are so strong.
So would you say, you know, if money were taken out of politics in the USA, the way it's not in politics in Sweden, would that change things a lot?
Oh yes, I think so. But I think also that, I think it may be more to it than that, but definitely I think that money rules as it is now very much. People with a lot of money have a chance to change the way media and campaigning and all that works.
Yeah, so, it has, money can have a lot of influence.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And I think also that maybe there is this sort of distrust in politicians because of this in the US. I mean, like elsewhere. I mean, we have our problems here as well.
Yep.
It's not perfect. But in comparison, I think I read somewhere that, you know, there is this index from corruption, you know, the amount of corruption from between the within governments and governmental corruption, and Sweden is the fourth or the third best or something like that, or in the top anyway in the world. So it's it's something that it's looked upon very harshly by the
corruption in the government. And it's no wonder then that in Sweden I have observed a very minimal tendency. So people are very unlikely to question the government here. It's not like, oh, what choice did you make for your child about this? And what did you do about this? And how do you do that? You know, we don't here ask a lot of questions about it because in general, and you'll correct me if your, you know, impression is different, but in general, the government is a trustworthy entity here.
Yeah.
There isn't, like you said, it rates really high in the, so it makes more sense to me. It's very strange to me because I was born in a country that, and encouraged to ask questions and, well, what is this? And what, you know, of a country that, has many times not proven itself to be trustworthy. And even if it did speak up about what it was doing, such as with certain wars we have waged, that didn't align with my values. So I still am going to keep asking questions.
Yeah.
So it's different.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. So moving on, I just love getting into these conversations and listeners. I'm grateful that you're here and sharing in this conversation about Sweden with Daniel. So we've got some questions from some of you that you've shared. And, but first I just want to check in on, this is a big deal. So, in my, community in America, you know, of the people I know and kind of what I observe, one of the ways Americans look up to Sweden is, in the sense of, in the arena of healthcare. So I have friends who've gone broke or most, or, you know, almost gone broke. Put it this way, healthcare is a big problem in America. And in Sweden, I've never heard one person complain or express concern that somehow if they got sick, they would be in big trouble because they can't pay for it. Mm. So let's just clarify. It's true that if you are a Swedish citizen, you have health medical coverage. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. What I hear on the, I don't like to talk about this side, that side, but I have heard some people say, oh, but they pay such high taxes, you know, so as, you know, as if the tax rate here is a bad thing. And yet I scratch my head because being here, I've never also heard somebody complain about high taxes. Mm. I don't even really know what my question is here, Daniel, but, I guess I'll just ask for you and your family. You have a 1-year-old daughter, a beautiful little daughter, Daphne. You know, you've brought her into this world. You brought her into the world in this country. Do you feel good about the healthcare system in Sweden? And does it work in general for people here?
Yeah, I think that the main idea about free healthcare is something that is like us. Might have said earlier, it's something that you, as a Swede, take for granted in a way. Mm. I mean, if I go and have an operation or surgery or something, I wouldn't expect to pay for it. I mean, it's a right. I mean, so I think it's just an administrative fee. You know, you pay 100 Swedish kronor, $12 or something like that. I think that was the when I had to pay the bill for the delivery of Daphne. Yeah.
So I just want to repeat that because it's actually shocking, almost incomprehensible to an American, whether you have great health insurance or not. Mm. And if you're financially really wealthy, then you just pay for really, 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 really good private health insurance, you know, but Daniel, you just said that you paid about $12.
I think I'm maybe wrong there, but the price that you pay is nothing that you even think of, really. Well, and I think it's the same as if I have a medical exam, like a general, you know, it's something like that. You pay 100 Swedish kronor, which is something like that,
Right, for your daughter to be born. I think, Daniel, I think the most important question, you know, that American listeners and perhaps others might want to hear is just the rate that you are taxed at, your income taxes, does it feel too high?
No. Not. I mean, there's people in Sweden who are, you know, to the left and to the right, and everybody have their own opinions on things. And some people complain about taxes, but in general, I think the idea that we're paying taxes is something that is quite. Everybody embraces that idea. You know, it's something that even those who are critical to taxes wouldn't go as far as I've heard many Americans who are critical to taxes. People who are critical here still wants to pay taxes, maybe not less, but it's still within, you know, okay, we pay taxes.
Uh-huh. The general idea of paying is fine.
Yeah, because what you get for it is something which is so good.
Yeah.
And you don't really, I mean, okay, some of my wages are going to taxes and quite a lot of it, but you know, I've never had any problem surviving on my money. Mm-hmm. You know, I can travel and travel, I think, more than a U.S. citizen, uh-huh. I'm a citizen.
Yeah.
I have my free healthcare. I have free school. I have free college, university, you name it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And beautiful theaters and libraries and.
Oh, yes. All these things.
Yeah.
So I think it's a very good thing. And it's also, I think, on a sort of, if you look at a bigger picture, I think that it gives you a certain amount of security. I mean, mm-hmm. the feeling, mm-hmm. the deep feeling of security, mm-hmm. compared to if you would live somewhere else, mm-hmm. that you don't have to worry about getting sick, more than being sick itself, or something like that, because you know that those things are taken care of.
Yeah. As I've looked around, you know, you ask, okay, so people are paying high income taxes, you know, and not everyone works here, although I don't think the unemployment rate is as high as in America, but generally speaking, you look around and you think, okay, so they're paying higher income taxes than we are as Americans. Is that a struggle? Let's see. Is that guy, you know, when I look around and at people and everyone's, as far as having enough, most people are fine. There's not this dramatic, people are struggling because they have to pay too much taxes.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when you think of, I mean, an average Swedish family, they have their cars or their house, and they have their 5 weeks of paid holiday and that's the minimum, you know. And then they have their travels to Thailand in winter time or something like that.
Yes.
And, you know, it means that we have a logum amount of money to have a good life and still pay a lot of taxes.
Yeah. Well, and it all weaves back into itself, right? You know, if you're going to buy $1,000 or 8,000 krona worth of new clothes every 6 months or every 3 months, then you might not have enough and you might complain about high taxes because you want to direct, you know, it all weaves into itself.
True.
So let's check in on a couple questions that we got from listeners. So we have somebody in San Diego, California. Actually, now she's in Portland, Oregon, I should say. And then somebody from back east somewhere. I don't know exactly where, but the east coast of the U.S. So we'll start with this one. Stephanie asks, are the Swedes generally friendly to expatriates? And specifically, what is the general climate towards Americans? So why don't we start with the first one? Are Swedes generally friendly to expats?
I'd say so, yeah. I think that's... I think it's a long history culturally of Sweden being... bit on the periphery of things. I mean, the Swedish psyche, because we've been sort of a bit of the outskirts of Europe in a way, and where things are happening, it's a long sort of history of feeling wanting to be like the rest of Europe or the US or whatever, you know. People in Sweden are generally quite curious. And so I think in general, Swedes are a bit like the Japanese. We're great at copying things.
Copying?
Yeah, uh-huh. And taking up trends and so on. So I heard somewhere that a lot of people who, try to... see if something is, I don't know the right English word for it, but if they want to see if something sells or an idea or something like that, they try out in Sweden first, because if it takes on there, then it will take on, we are very good at sort of copying. For instance, I mean, the Swedish cuisine is the traditional, real old Swedish cuisine is quite bland and boring. And it's because it was a poor country. And then as we got wealthier in the 20th century and all that, when we started to go abroad, we picked up a lot of different things and copying things and making it our own, you know, with a Swedish twist and whatever. And so I think in general, we have this sort of idea that it's more, much more interesting abroad. And so I think that whenever we meet expats, or US citizens or British citizens or whatever, we tend to be very curious in a positive way. Yeah.
Well, and I'm not an expat in the sense that I'm not moving here permanently. However, I have come here and stayed for a little bit of time. And, you know, my own, Stephanie, to your question and to other listeners who are interested, my own experience is that people are as friendly to me as they are to anyone else. There's no different way people treat me, except perhaps sometimes with a little curiosity, especially if there's a beer involved or that can warm things up a little bit. But yeah, that's been my experience too, yeah. Daniel.
I should add there that yes. Swedes are notoriously shy. So they may not sort of fall into your lap. Oh, who are you? You know. Yeah. But once you get them some beer or some aquavit, then open up.
The light in the eyes sprouts out.
Yeah.
And then her other part, the other part of her question, specifically, what's the general climate towards Americans you've observed?
I don't think there's a big difference between other expats and Americans. Mm. I think that, especially if you're American, maybe it might be even be easier in a way, because there is so much that we know about America through films and popular, you know, culture and stuff like that. So there's so much we, you know, to fire off questions.
Yeah, conversation.
Yeah, a lot of Swedish people have studied in the U.S. Yeah.
So, Daniel, you mentioned curiosity being a common trait of a Swedish person, and I actually almost have been embarrassed a few times, but I think I'm maybe humble enough to not get embarrassed. I don't know, but about it. But you know, I know less about America and about the world than most Swedes who I've spoken with. And I think, you know, this gets back to the education, the quality of education here. It gets back to maybe the fact that Europeans in general have a more well-informed perspective on the world. It gets back to the fact that Americans, including me, can be very, oh, I just need to know about America. It's the best, you know? I remember when my husband called me out on that one early on. Oh, gosh, I do say that, don't I? Goodness. In any case, to the listener's question, you know, I have found that Swedish people don't overtly express to me that they have an opinion about me as an American or about America. However, they are very pleased when I acknowledge that America is both a mess and has beautiful qualities. Hmm. It's as if Swedish people understand that. America is a huge country with huge diversity in every category, and you find both people who are, I will say, brokenhearted and mean, like some very famous people we know, and then you find exceptionally kind and creative and intelligent people. So, but I will say it's been pretty funny. A lot of people think California's sunny all the time. And it's not. But the people listening to this probably won't think that. But as we look out the window here, it's from the library, and it's semi-snowing.
Yeah. Watching the sleet fall from the window.
It's always right around freezing here.
Yeah.
So that was one of the questions. And then Marissa had a question. So this is what she wrote, and I'll just read it as she wrote it. She asks, are the women as free as the American women? I'm spending time in Ireland, and I never understood until now how much I have as an American woman that these women don't have. Rights to abortion, divorce, freedom of religion, full freedom of speech and expression. It seems to be a generation behind, yet progressing. So granted, that's her experience. I don't know how much time she spent in Ireland. But what would you say to that question?
Was Sweden as well as the Nordic countries always score the highest in gender equality issues in the world, actually. I recently saw this graph from the World Economic Forum or something, I think it's called. And in the top there is the Nordic countries, Sweden, Finland, Denmark, Iceland, and all that. Sweden was in fourth place, and the U.S. was in 45th place. So,
and the graph was, so this is a World Economic Forum graph.
And it took into consideration economic equality, health equality, which means, I think, you know, like things like that we have paid maternity leave as well as paternal paid leave. I mean, I've just been home with my daughter from April until just now, mid-January. And it's all paid for. And the thing that we have, that we have this sort of paternal leave, also means that it's, you know, it's equality, gender equality.
So the other direction. So when fathers weren't getting...
Yeah, but it also means that the it's not always the woman has to stay home and for maternal leave. You know, she can go and continue her career, and the dad can be home. So it's a lot of health equality like that, and it's political equality, and so this is what the, those this this thing that I read was based upon. And as usually, the Nordic country scores in the top five.
It's it reminds me a little bit, when I look around here, you see the fathers with the babies and in the strollers, and I, you know, they're in the city and they're getting on the tram and the bus, and I just know when I pass that stroller, because I kind of can't not look at a baby. It's hard not to look at a baby. They're so beautiful. But I know in the stroller, I'm probably going to see a baby between 10 months and a year and a half, somewhere around a year, because usually, mothers take the first year, and maybe they're breastfeeding, maybe they're not, but it's there with the baby the first year, and then the father takes the 6 months after, right? So you've just come off that time with your daughter, and you know, like you said, it was paid for. I know there are many men listening who would probably love to have had that time with their babies, and it actually reminds me of Portland, Oregon, because there are a lot of stay-at-home dads in smart cities like Portland.
So. Yeah, we actually call them latte papa.
Latte
dads. And it means, it's because you always see this, you know, big flocks of dads with their prams at cafes, sitting drinking coffee and with their prams. I think it's something that is it's quite common here. You know, you have first year or whatever with the mum being home, and then she goes back to work, and then the dad takes over for like a 6 months or a year or something like that.
And her job is held for her, is that right?
Absolutely.
I've been contemplating what that means for the organization and how they work around that, and somebody reassured me, you know, well, they're just used to working around that,
so it's not a really an issue.
So we've talked a lot about how Sweden works, and you know, some of the kind of core principles of design in this society and how that looks for people. And Daniel, on a more personal level, just for you, you know, in your life, what are some of the ways Sweden makes you proud or happy or grateful to be from here?
I think obviously I'm very happy about having the chance to live in a country which has these possibilities that we've discussed. You get born with a kind of feeling of security and so on. Another thing that unfortunately is a bit lacking nowadays, we're still there, but before, I mean, when I grew up, Sweden was more vocal abroad. But, I mean, Sweden is neutral. We have a sort of, when it comes to, I mean, during the Cold War or, you know, all those, we're a neutral country, and we've always been very much peace negotiators and that sort of role in the world. But also we've been historically standing up very much for inequalities in the world, and we had some very, very good leaders. We had one called Olof Palme, who was very vocal, for instance, about the Vietnam War, and and it's funny because when you travel in the third world, which I've done quite a lot, and you see all those streets and plazas named after him because he's such a huge person in Africa and other places, and it's because of all the aid that Sweden has given, and Sweden was very vocal about the apartheid, for instance, and things like that. So we have a long history of standing up for people's rights around the world, and that's something that I'm very proud of.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that has changed.
Yeah.
Sweden has turned into sort of more careful and, I would say, coward in a way. In this, but we still do a lot in this sort of traditional Swedish things.
Yeah. Well, as you speak to a loss of courage, to speak up. And I just want to bring in, a little bit of a piece of something that, a couple issues actually that are huge today, immigration. Mm. So, as I look around here in Sweden, in this city, the second largest city in Sweden, there are 400,000 people here in Gothenburg, and a lot of people here are immigrants.
Mm.
And you can kind of tell, who's from Sweden, and then you see people from maybe Middle Eastern countries, maybe from some African countries. I'm not exactly sure. Mm. I haven't really studied the makeup the immigrants here, but it's surprising. It's been surprising to me, actually. They're quite a large population. And the other day I was on a tram, a city tram, and a woman stood up when I came onto the tram with my 4-year-old daughter. She stood up and got out of her seat for me and Helena, and I thought it was so kind of her because it doesn't happen a lot. And she stood by us, and we ended up talking because she was so warm. She said, "Where are you from?" And I told her, and I said, "Where are you from?" And she said, "Iran." And I just instantly, my heart kind of swelled up because I've had this feeling observing all these people coming from different countries, many of which are not safe for them to stay in. And she said, I've been here for 30 something years. And I said, "Does it feel like home?"
Hmm.
And she got this look on her face like, "I can't answer that."
Hmm.
She said, "Maybe some other time we'll talk more about that. I have to go."
Hmm.
But you mentioned Sweden's changing a lot, you know, and I will say it actually takes, and this isn't in arguing with a lot, lots.
Hmm.
Well, what I will say is where there's been less courage maybe to speak up on an international plane with war, with regards to war and things, on an immigration stance, in my perspective, it takes a lot of courage to allow so many people to come here because it really changes things when you invite totally different cultures in large numbers to come to your culture.
Mm.
Now, I think people have a right to a safe space to live and eat and all that, but times are changing really fast here.
Yeah, it's been one of the big sort of political issues the last years in Sweden, because we have a long tradition of giving asylum. It's called, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
For people in need. And now with the Syrian war and all that, there has been a big influx of people coming from the Middle East, as well as North Africa and so on. And we've had this sort of open door policy in a way, actually the thing is that there is some sort of guidelines in the EU for how many people that you're supposed to take in and all that. And the thing is that Sweden is just has just been following those guidelines, whereas the UK and some other countries haven't, you know. Mm-hmm. But it has formed a lot of problems because there has been a lot of immigrants come in lately because of all those crises in the world. And it has it's starting to be a lot of criticism.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
there mm-hmm. is a political party which is sort of far right, and they are very sort of they're kind of hostile towards this, mm-hmm. you know, non-Swedish, you know, that kind of thing. Like you said, and I mean, it's the rise of that sort of movement all around the world, really. You know, you can see it with Donald Trump, you can see it in the UK and in France, and this is just this is a Swedish equivalent, you know, and they have been given a lot of votes in recent elections.
Mm-hmm.
And they get a lot of fodder for their arguments because mm-hmm. of the big immigration, the situation as it is right now.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and, definitely. You know, when change happens in our lives, none of us is, you know, by default, just jumping for joy. Oh, big change. Woohoo, yeah. Let's go, yeah. You know. So change is challenging for humans and, you know, I have compassion for the fears that might arise about cultures changing fast. However, if you look with an open heart at the whole world and how fast things change by nature, you know, you just kind of, you know, we can't expect for things always to be peachy. And
And I think in Sweden, I mean, the reason why this political party has gained so much is I don't think it's so much about the immigrants itself, because we can handle that. I mean, that's not really an issue, but it's because I think the reason is because that social democracy that we had once has been slowly starting to be dismantled. And you start to see inequality differences in income that you didn't see 20 years ago or something like that. So a lot of people are, like in the US, people are upset and they need a scapegoat. Mm. And this political party is very quick to point out that it's the immigration that is the problem. They're taking the jobs and so on. Like you hear in all around the world.
Yeah.
But,
Yeah, well, it's easier to blame, you know, it's easier to get support if you blame something that has a face, yeah. you know, rather than a complex system that takes.
And also, I should just add there that I think that another reason why Swedes are moaning about this is that, to be blunt, we've had it so good so long, uh-huh, so that we have sort of lost a little bit. We need a reality check. You know, we think that we're not having it good when we're having it very good,
right.
You know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah. How can the rest of the world, in your mind, learn from some of Sweden's ways? Like, if you had a magic wand, Daniel, and you could pick three things or two things that the world could learn from Sweden, what would be the two things you would want the rest of the world to take on?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think something that we touched upon a little bit earlier about the political system, regardless of what political system you have, I think that one thing that I'm very happy about here is that there isn't as much mistrust towards the government or politicians, because in the end, the government and politicians are the spokesman for the people.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'm thinking a little bit like, what was it called? Magna Carta in medieval England, you know, when they set up this thing, you know, that the king had to sign, you know, you can't do anything because then we get rid of you, you know, that sort of thing, you know, sort of an early government. I don't know. I don't know the details about that. But in a way, it's the government for me is something that sort of regulates corporate powers and interests so that they don't destroy the lives for the people. I mean, the government is there to govern the things that are ours, sort of, you know, the healthcare and blah, 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 blah. And to have that trust is something that I think I value a lot, and I wish that other countries would have the chance to have that sort of, and no sort of mistrust. You know, we have a mistrust, but it's more whether the foreign minister used her governmental money to buy a Toblerone chocolate bar. It's no big things, yeah, you know. Yeah. It's very small in comparison, you know. And it's outraging. Yeah, but seriously, it's a level of trust for the government in general, you know. That I think it's something I am.
Yeah, and you know, it seems like America can sometimes go back and forth quite a bit. You know, we can have somebody who has relatively high level of ethical credibility, and then somebody who you just wonder, wow, how did that happen?
Yeah.
You know, and I do believe that each generation comes into being with a higher level of intelligence and courage, overall willingness to speak for life and for what's good in life. So I'm commending all of the teenagers and tweens and all those in America and otherwise who are speaking up, because you know what's good and it's your future. So thank you for that. So last, Daniel, just on a little bit of a tourist perspective, for listeners who want to visit Sweden someday, what places would you suggest they visit?
Oh, well, everywhere.
Everywhere.
No, but I think just for the sake of it, I think that if they visit Sweden, they should visit during summer because, I mean, winters are cold, but considering how far north we are, it's not as cold as one would think, and the summers are very warm by comparison, you know. And I would go somewhere in central Sweden, like the sort of the core of Sweden, you know, the big forest there. There is, for instance, a county, would you say that?
Like a county.
Called Dalarna, which means the valleys or the dales, which is very sort of primal Swedish culture, you know, and very, very beautiful, deep forests and beautiful and interesting dialects. They have, for instance, one area where some valleys where they speak this language, which is completely, you know, it's like a different language, Elfdalian, which is apparently it's more archaic than Old Norse, you know, in some ways. And they used runes up until the 19th century, you know. It's a very sort of very traditional, very beautiful nature and all that. And go there and celebrate Midsummer, which is the big holiday in Sweden.
Midsummer's in Dalarna County, so the second part of June. And I will say, you know, in closing, I get it now why Swedes do this thing. So you will be walking down the street in like any of the sunny months. So there are three or four sunny months, and you will see people standing, staring at the sun, like no shame. They don't care who's looking at them. They will just stare. And it's like they're kind of praying to the sun, sort of thing. It's like a worship. And I was like, wow, you know, people are really into the sun here. That's cool. Well, now that I've actually been through the bulk of a Swedish winter, now it's not super cold in Gothenburg. It hovers around freezing. It goes below, it goes above, but not too much. Oh wow, I get it. You know, the sun is the sun is a really big deal.
We love summer. I mean, and it gets really, as you know, it gets very dark here in winter. And still, we're in the south. And imagine living up north when it's when you have night all around the 24 hours, yeah. more or less, you know, the sun just goes just above the horizon and then down again, you know.
Yeah.
Horrible, you know.
No surprise that a lot of candles are sold here. There's yeah. candles in all the coffee shops, candles everywhere.
Oh, yeah, and that's why the springtime is so magical here as well, because suddenly this gives way to warm weather and people, you know, just go crazy.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah. I'm excited about springtime. Well, thank you so much, Daniel, for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And listeners, again, you can find these free interviews every month at leaningintolight.com on our workshops page. We hope that you've taken something valuable today, whether it's for your own personal life or for sharing with others. And we look forward to hearing from you. If you'd like to share any thoughts with us, and have a wonderful day.